The South Akron Youth Mentorship is exactly what the name implies. These folks mentor the youth of Akron, Ohio. If you would like to volunteer or perhaps help with a charitable donation, please visit saymentor.org and find out how you can help out today. That's saymentor.org.
Welcome to the Phil Nasons Show.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to the Phil Nasons Show. I'm happy to have you here, and we'll be here for the entire hour. And we'll talk Atlanta Hawks basketball, and we're going to talk a little baseball, Boston Red Sox baseball, fantasy basketball. Alex McLean will be here, and we'll talk some Atlanta Hawks hoops. But up first, the San Antonio Spurs had a tough one against the Golden State Warriors, and I thought that they would pull it out. But man, you can't stop the threes. And joining me to talk about that and a whole bunch more Spurs talk, please welcome J.R. Wilco from PoundingTheRock.com. J.R., how you doing? Welcome to the show.
Thank you, Phil. Doing great. Yourself?
Ugh, I'm trying to get used to this American weather in the Midwest. It's crap. I must admit, it's crap. One day it's minus 40, the next day it's a blizzard. Ugh, it is what it is. But I guess, you know, up being up and down and inconsistent is probably, you're probably used to that this season, up and down and a little bit inconsistent, right?
Man, that's the way it's been. The Spurs have not gone on the run that we all expected them to once they kind of got healthy. I mean, they've played well. They've won 10 of the last 16. They've got the fourth best winning percentage since January the 1st. So, I mean, that kind of stuff is optimistic, but they're getting those wins, not necessarily against the best teams, and Golden State just had their way on Friday night.
The Bombs Away boys went and bombed away. That's what they do, yeah. Though. I mean, and they do it a lot, but this time they really went crazy. They don't miss. You know, sometimes it. I know it's difficult when it's your team that they're doing it to, but since they don't do it against the Knicks very often, only twice a year. It's kind of interesting to watch when they do that, though. I mean, just boom, 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 and they don't seem to miss. It's crazy.
It is crazy. It reminds me of the series that the Spurs had against the Warriors a couple years back when Curry was just going crazy. And every single time he let go of the ball, if it even hit the rim, you felt weird. It's like, oh, that was weird. And if he missed it, it felt surreal because literally every single time he let go of the ball, it just seemed like it was going to go in. And that was just some absolutely insane shooting that the Warriors did. I mean, like 51.5% of their threes. And as many as they took as well. I mean, it was just 17 of 33. Those aren't numbers that you see every night. And so it was probably one of the better, if not the best game that the Warriors have played all year long. But, you know, the Spurs had won 8 straight against them. Those guys were motivated and they're playing very, very good ball right now. Their defense is all over everybody on every single possession, and they trust their teammates to be able to get up in the face of whomever they're guarding, so that if they do get by them, that they'll have their backs, and they just go for it. And it's very aggressive defense, very aggressive offense as well. And what can you say? They just absolutely put it to the Spurs.
Kind of reminded me of last year's playoffs after Game 7 against Dallas, when the Spurs would just start getting hot and never miss. It kind of seemed like that. You know, it goes around, comes around sometimes. Basketball, like every other sport, is a funny game. It's fun when it's you that are doing it and not missing, and you look at each other like, huh, I can't believe everything we're throwing up is going in. But then when it happens to you, you're like, ugh. You can see that, you know, when they were coming down the floor, it wasn't because the Spurs weren't playing good defense. It's just the ball went in repeatedly.
Well, you know, yeah, it was repeatedly. It was just like, it's kind of like the same type thing in Game 3 against Miami in the finals when the Spurs hit, it was almost 76. It was 75.8% of their shots in the first half there. I mean, that's that kind of stuff. Just you can't sustain it. You just have to enjoy it while it's going on. And I wouldn't say the Spurs didn't. I wouldn't say the Spurs played fair to even good defense. They played all right defense overall, but they did not play. And a half since Andre Iguodala even hit, I think, three threes in a game. And you know, of course, that happened last night. So those guys were exceptionally motivated. I think Curry mentioned the last game that he played, how Tony Parker had outplayed him so much. So he was motivated as well. And, you know, like the Spurs have the bullseye of the defending champs on them, right? So they're not catching anybody on a down night. Everybody's getting up for the Spurs. They're the champs. You know, I mean, if you're having a horrible season, you know, you can feel good about yourself for weeks if you beat the champs. And the Warriors are not having a horrible season. They're playing the best ball in the league right now, and it showed. So they had Kerr is doing an excellent job with that team, preparing them on both offense and defense. And, you know, it was interesting to see one of Pop's disciples just absolutely rolling on the sidelines. I mean, Kerr is so involved in the game. He's so active and interactive and just constantly on the refs and yelling like crazy. But he's not yelling with his guys, right? His style is more of a relation, more of interactive on the sidelines, and that team really responds to it.
Well, yeah, they do, because it's the opposite of what Mark Jackson did, but the same type of style. You know, we want you to do this. We don't want you to do that. And they play really well. But were you surprised that the Spurs didn't do anything at the trade deadline?
No. I'm always surprised when they do, right? Because they absolutely never panic. And if you want to call the Richard Jefferson trade a panic, then it's the exception that proves the rule, right? Those guys just they just keep on keeping on. They know what their long-term goal is, and they're not going to give up any long-term assets for a short-term fix to try and do anything this year. They're always looking down. They're always challenging for the championship. They're always championship contenders, and yet they're always looking long-term as well. So that's one of the fun things about following them is that, you know, you never feel like you're mortgaging your future for this year, and you never feel like you're ignoring this year to go long term. They do a great job of keeping one foot in each one of those worlds. So if they had done anything, it would have been surprising to me because the defending champs, because they brought everybody back, and you know they're taking one more shot with it with the guys that they have.
Yeah, that makes sense too. Tonight, Utah are giant killers. They've only won 20 games, but most of them were against the best teams around, including the other night they knocked off the Portland Trailblazers, who the Spurs play on Wednesday.
Yep. So we got a couple of teams, again, finishing in the middle of the rodeo road trip, all of these games visiting, and Utah's not an easy place to play at. Portland's not playing the best ball right now. I think they're 5-5 of the last 10. Utah, it might even be 4-6 now, after Utah's win. So they're definitely not playing great, but again, everybody's getting up for the Spurs, these days, and both of these teams are at home where they're most comfortable. So, I expect probably a couple more tough games, even like you said, with Utah, the way they've been king killers this year.
They certainly have. In the Portland game, that's going to be interesting, too, for a lot of different reasons, I suppose. And we'll cover that more on the Blazers Edge podcast with Dave Deckard on Tuesday. Of course we will, because they're excited over there. They think that they can beat the Spurs again. You know, that playoff series didn't really help them much, but it actually gave them motivation, which is also not a great thing if you're a Spurs fan, right?
Everybody's motivated against San Antonio, it seems right now, but you know, I mean, it's hard to blame them because of the way that the Spurs are playing in the finals and the way that everybody watches those games at the end of the season and really, you know, tears that apart and says, okay, how can we take them out of what they like to do, what they do well? And so it's essentially it's essentially just that much more scouting report on the Spurs that were out available to everyone because it was so high profile the way they took out the Heat.
Yep, you're absolutely right. It's going to be interesting this week. We'll catch up with you later on in the week. We're going to talk a little more about the Spurs. Talk to you later, JR. Yeah.
All right, see you next time.
All right, that was JR Wilco, and you can catch him over at poundingtherock.com, and we'll be right back. You're listening to The Phil Nason Show. Welcome back to The Phil Nason Show. The Boston Red Sox have made some moves. And, of course, you know they had to because they finished in the basement in the East last year. And joining me to talk all about these moves, please welcome from Rush Olson, Creative and Sport. Rush Olson is in the house. Rush, how you doing? Welcome to the show.
I am well. Good to be here, Phil.
It's great to have you here. Boston. You know, it's really cool that we're going to do this on Monday. We're probably going to do this later in the week, too, because I missed a day of recording because I was a bit under the weather. Fighting with all these Thunder fans every day, it wore me down. But
yes.
They didn't kill me like they wanted to. It's all good. Anyhow, Yoan Mercado, the kid from Cuba, the number two prospect, switch hitting prospect, 6'2", 205-pound, second baseman prospect. What in the world? $30 million, Rush.
Well, and it's not just the $30 million. It's that because they're over their international signing money limit, they're actually paying double that. Only 30 of it goes to Yuan, but the Red Sox have made an enormous investment in this kid because they have to not only pay him, they have to pay the penalty, and then they also have to give up the opportunity cost of their signings the next couple years because they can't exceed a $300,000 bonus for any prospect the next 2 years in Latin America. So the Red Sox are all in on this kid.
Yeah, they certainly are. They went all in, but from all reports, he's pretty good. You know, they don't usually miss with these Cuban kids, and he's going to begin in Double A, and we'll probably see him next year, probably. That's a lot of loot. $60 million total. Hoo-wee. But you know what? God bless him.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah, certainly good for him. And he's kind of unique because he's the first kid in a while that the Cuban government has actually signed off on him coming over to play. And so hopefully that is the sign of things to come where they're going to open up a more traditional dialogue where players who want to go somewhere else and play can do it. They've already started to do it somewhat with the Japanese leagues. And hopefully this will be a good sign for the future where those kids have more freedom to go where they want.
Yeah, we don't need to see any more baseball players risking their lives to play baseball in America or anywhere else for that matter.
Well, and you'd like to think it'll be that in general. I mean, you'd like to see any person that wants to live where they want to live be able to go and do it. And so hopefully, the baseball can be a catalyst to more, more opportunities for anyone in Cuba that wants to go do something somewhere else.
I'm with you on that. Now, Boston made some moves in the offseason. I kind of like this team a little bit. You know, I'm a big Boston Red Sox fan, as you know.
Yes.
And you know why, right?
I do know why.
Yes, of course. I don't think I'm going to break these people's hearts and tell them why because it's not nice. And I don't like to gloat about these things. But Hanley Ramirez, that was a big signing in the offseason. You know, the other one, this one kind of threw me. I didn't think this was going to happen. After they signed Hanley Ramirez one day, the next day they signed Pablo Sandoval. Now, you would have think the Kung Fu Panda would have probably stayed with the Giants, but whatever. I don't know what Kung Fu Panda was thinking, but this ain't a bad team, Rush.
I tell you what, you look at this lineup top to bottom, it is stout. They've got solid hitters all up and down the lineup. They've got depth. They've got, this team is built to withstand some injuries. If you get an injury to one of the older players, you've got some guys ready to step in. There's a lot to like about this lineup.
You know, that's the thing, too. Shane Victorino is currently on the pine, as is Alan Craig. Mm-hmm. You know, those guys are on the pine. But this is the infield that they can throw out there. And this is interesting. They've got that Vasquez kid. Christian Vasquez is the catcher. Mike Napoli, a guy you're very familiar with, at first. Dustin Pedroia at second. Xander Bogaerts is at short, and Pablo Sandoval at third. And here's the other thing, though, Rush. We talk about Hanley Ramirez, and you would have thought shorter second. Oh, no, he's out left right now. But here's the other thing, though, Rush, is these young kids they've got. This Brock Holt can play just about anywhere in the infield. And here's the other thing. They put Mookie Betts out right. There's just no room for anybody in that infield. This is a good baseball team.
It really is. And you know, what you mentioned right there brings up another thing they have, which is versatility. If you get an injury and you need to move a Hanley Ramirez to maybe play some third base, or you need David Ortiz to play first for a couple of games, or you need Alan Craig to play any one of a number of positions, you've got that, and you're not going to suffer a whole lot with the bat.
No, you sure won't. And the thing is, it's going to be fun to kind of watch what goes on in spring training, because there's some battles here. This is going to be interesting. I think they set it up that way, too. And don't rule out a trade either. You know, I wouldn't. I wouldn't rule out a trade. But Pedroia is happy because he's got his former AA mate, Hanley Ramirez, with him, calling him Smurf, which is basically what the little runt is, Smurf. But I'm not a big Dustin Pedroia fan at all, you know. But I'm a big Boston Red Sox fan. And Big Pappy, he's still around, the DH. Got to love him. Nobody's taking his job.
Nope. The interesting thing about the Red Sox will be the pitching. What happens in the starting rotation? Of course, they had been rumored to be in on Cole Hamels. You wonder if maybe this Moncada signing took any budget that they would have spent on Cole Hamels' salary. That would have to be a trade with the Phillies, but they were certainly rumored to be involved in that. How the starting rotation holds up may be the most important thing for the Red Sox, and the thing that we have to watch to determine how well they do.
Yeah, let's get one thing at a time here. You know why they don't have any more? Well, actually, the truth is they have lots of money. They haven't fixed their field in 100 years. So, I mean, they have money. It's a big budget. You know, they went down to the toilet last year, and they came right back and spent the cash. Here's their starting lineup, Rush. Rick Porcello, a former Tiger. Well, okay. Clay Buchholz, Wade Miley. And Wade Miley, somebody I actually discussed as a sleeper for fantasy baseball last week. Justin Masterson is another one I think is a sleeper. And you also have Joe Kelly. This is a very pedestrian starting staff. Clay Buchholz, I'm sure they probably are going to check his baseball glove and the back of his hair more often this year, I hope. Mm-hmm. Rick Porcello, though, you know, if he was upset about pitching into Tiger Stadium, what do you think is going to happen in Fenway? He's not going to like that place at all.
Yeah, Fenway's will be a tough place to pitch for a right-handed pitcher, especially. You know, he's a ground ball guy, though. He tries to pitch down in the zone and get a lot of ground balls. So his style will at least play well for him there. Whether or not he enjoys it, I don't know. He'll enjoy it if they win a lot, and he's going to get some run support, no doubt. So I think pitchers certainly enjoy having that.
Well, I know he's a ground ball pitcher, and that infield is pretty good, actually. He's probably going to be happier than he was in Detroit because they couldn't catch a cold, unlike me, of course. But needless to say, this is a decent starting staff. The bullpen, I'm not too big a fan of that. Edward Mujica is probably their best one. But this is where the rubber meets the road. This kid, Koji Uehara. I'm working on my Japanese, Rush. Anyhow, he had a tough time last year. And we'll have to wait and see what happens this year. But then again, the Red Sox, unfortunately, were not very good. I would have said sucked, but that's not nice.
No, that wouldn't be nice.
That would have been nice.
Uehara has, for the most part, in the major leagues, Uehara has been nails. He's been good. He had he struggled when he was with the Rangers a little bit, but then he had a spectacular year the year the Red Sox won the World Series a couple of years ago, and he struggled a little bit last year. They've got some depth. You know, their relief corps is a little bit like their starting rotation. You don't know that you have a star, but you've got a whole bunch of what should be solid contributors. And how those all shake out, you know, do you plug Uehara back in the closer role and he just stays there the whole season? And if he's effective, you keep him there. That might be. Do they have to do it a different way? We'll see.
Yeah, he's been great. He just was hurt last year, too, I think. That probably had a lot to do with it. And all kidding aside, this is a pretty good baseball team. Hanley Ramirez out in left. This is where it's going to get interesting. I think you're going to see a battle in center field between Castillo, Mookie Betts probably, And, mm-hmm. and don't let's not forget Jackie Bradley Jr. Now, who is Jackie Bradley? I always wonder when they put the junior next to their name, why? Who is Jackie Bradley again?
Apparently, Jackie Bradley Jr.'s father. We can at least determine that much. And okay. apparently, they must be close enough that he wants to go by Junior.
That's fair enough. I was just curious.
I applaud that. I applaud that.
I do too. I just was curious. Maybe his father's famous. You know, I wasn't giving him a hard time. But don't rule out Shane Victorino winding up out in right. Or Alan Craig, even. Alan Craig is going to have a nice time in Boston. That Fenway Park is a beautiful place for right-handed hitters, right?
Yeah, he might. He's the type of hitter that should do well out there. You know, you've got Daniel Nava too. I mean, you've got really good depth. I mean, guys with that you know can play in the major leagues. They've just got so many good players in that system. I think that they've really set themselves up to succeed over the course of 162 games.
Yeah, but I don't think they're going to succeed in the East because it's pretty good over there. Even the Yankees are better. And we talked about the Yankees last week. We gave a great preview of that team. That was fantastic. That was great radio. I don't care what anybody says. Rush, I think the Boston Red Sox, we'll get into this in another 3 weeks when we do our division-by-division preview. But this is a pretty good team, all kidding aside.
Yeah, I think they're going to bounce back this year. They've taken the steps in the offseason necessary to get there.
Oh, yes, they have. Rush, great stuff. We'll see you tomorrow when we talk about my Detroit Tigers.
That sounds great, Phil.
All right. Rush, thank you so much. That was Rush Olson, and you can catch him over at rusholson.com, and we'll be right back. You're listening to The Phil Nason Show. Welcome back to The Phil Nason Show. The Eastern Conference of the NBA just got a little more exciting thanks to the trade deadline and some other things that we'll talk about, including Chris Bosh's untimely illness. That's horrific. That's horrible. I would have thought they were in contention for winning the Eastern Conference after their Goran Dragic signing, but it is what it is. And joining me to talk about that, please welcome from GrizzlyBearBlues.com, Joe Mullinax is in the house. Joe, how you doing? Welcome to the show.
I'm doing pretty well, continuing to thaw out here in the frigid mid-Atlantic state of Virginia. But, you know, we're moving along, and I'm excited to be on with you, Phil.
It's great having you here. I got to tell you, it's freaking cold here too, man. One minute it's minus 40. The next minute it's 10 inches of snow. I'm fed up. I'm done. This is my last winter. I don't care, but I got to tell you. I really got to tell you. The Detroit Pistons came up. I don't care what anybody says. Reggie Jackson, we know all about Reggie Jackson. He killed us in game 6 over for Memphis Grizzlies. What do you think about the Reggie Jackson signing, and does Detroit have a shot at this Eastern Conference 8th seed? Because I've been told they have no shot, and I'm talking nonsense.
I think they have a shot. I think that it's an interesting gamble that Detroit is taking with a Reggie Jackson, because he certainly has the ability to score the basketball. We've seen that as Memphis Grizzlies fans and bloggers, writers, all of us who follow the Memphis Grizzlies closely. We know what Reggie Jackson is capable of. But at the same time, it's been an interesting switch, because now you take Reggie Jackson, who maybe was too big for the role that he had in Oklahoma City, and you put him in Detroit, and now he might not be big enough for what it seems they're asking him to do, because Greg Monroe, for all intents and purposes in Detroit, is going to be gone after this season. You're taking a risk on a guy between him and Andre Drummond, and you're saying, okay, these two guys are going to be our horses, and they're going to be who we ride with, and hopefully they come along. Now, obviously, there's still a chance that Monroe gets re-signed, but we're talking about the next couple of months and the push for the playoffs in the East, and between Miami, Brooklyn, Charlotte, Detroit, and Indiana, and Boston, who has fallen out a little bit because of the injury to Jared Sullinger, you would guess. But between those five teams, there's only two games separating them. So there's really going to be a lot of potential for movement between the 7 and 8 seed. I'd say the top six are set: Atlanta, Toronto, Chicago, Cleveland, Washington, and Milwaukee. I think they're in, maybe give or take a seed or two here. But there's five teams basically competing for two spots now, and I don't see why Detroit, as long as Reggie Jackson can get set up and put in a position to be successful by Stan Van Gundy, who is one of the best coaches in the league, and I think he'll be able to do just that, Detroit's got a shot, and they've got just as good a shot as anybody else, especially because of the fact that they have a Greg Monroe and an Andre Drummond, two guys who kind of remind me, again, as a Memphis Grizzlies blogger, of the Marc Gasol-Zach Randolph tandem. Not exactly as good, maybe, or as skilled, but two dominant bigs who can really take advantage of some of the smaller front courts in the East. So Detroit's got a shot if they play within themselves and if they can integrate Reggie Jackson quickly.
Well, DJ Augustin did a nice job, but he's not the future, and they needed something in the future. Reggie Jackson's going to do some things for them. He's a good player. He's a very smart player. He doesn't turn the ball over either. And even when he was angry at the Thunder, he wasn't out there trying to lose on purpose. And now he's got the chance to run his own team. As far as Greg Drummond goes, or Greg Monroe goes, he's coming back. There's no question. That's why they got rid of Josh Smith. It's back to the way. It's back to business as usual. And I like what I see with the Pistons. If I don't know if you were the one I was doing the preview with or not, but I had them as an A seed with Josh Smith. Now I still have them as an A seed. I still think they're going to sneak through. I loved the trade. Loved it. Because, one, it cripples the Thunder, and I'm a Memphis Grizzlies / Portland Trailblazer fan, so it cripples the Thunder because defensively they're not as good. And, two, it gets the Pistons up there where I want them to be as the AC, so then I'm right, and I like it that way. But I'll tell you, the team that's creeping is Indiana. Watch out for Indiana. Don't sleep on Indiana. And I'm going to – one other thing. I'm going to disagree with you on the 6-seed Milwaukee. That trade they made, getting rid of Brandon Knight and bringing in Michael Carter-Williams, was a mistake. They got longer, but they didn't get better.
They got longer, but you can debate whether or not they got better. I think that Jason Kidd is intrigued by the athleticism of Michael Carter-Williams and the length that he brings. But you have to look at the standings. They're 8 games in front of Miami with maybe 28 to go. So I think that they're probably in. I don't see them fading as much as they would have to in order to completely fall out. Now, maybe they fall out of the 6 if you believe that, an Indiana or Detroit gets hot. And heck, even maybe Miami, once they figure out Goran Dragic being there, even without Chris Bosh, maybe they find a way to get it together a little bit and make a run. But there's just a big gap between the 6 and 7 seed right now. So I think Milwaukee is solidly in.
I'm waiting for them to collapse. They're like my Pittsburgh Pirates of the NBA. I'm waiting for them to collapse because I can't stand Jason Kidd. Let's just put it out there.
I know you can't, but you got to give credit where credit's due.
And I have.
A season there.
And I have. But here's the thing. Michael Carter-Williams is overrated. But either way, I like Detroit. I don't like Charlotte. I like Indiana. I like Boston, too, to sneak in there. You know, there's a couple of teams. I don't know what's going to happen with Miami. They really are going to be off without Chris Bosh, and Dwayne Wade's hurt too, off and on. Yeah, they're in big trouble. I don't like it. We'll be talking about them tomorrow, but I don't see Brooklyn hanging around any longer, and I think it's either Detroit or Indiana and Boston. Boston, they did a really good job, Joe, trading for Isaiah Thomas. It's time to put the team back together again.
I like Isaiah Thomas too, and I think that Boston next season is going to be a team that could potentially slide into that 7 or 8 seed, but it's going to be hard for them now that Jared Sullinger is out with his foot injury, and it's really unfortunate because he's a guy who, had injury issues coming out of Ohio State, and you saw him, kind of flourish in the NBA and have real success. So hopefully this is just a one-and-done injury and he's able to come back. I'm going to disagree with you a little bit on Brooklyn because I thought the deal for Kevin Garnett for Thaddeus Young, and I'm a big Thad Young guy, so I'll start off with that. But I really do think that's going to be an upgrade for them. They have an athletic forward to pair with Brook Lopez now. I think that Brooklyn is going to be one of those teams that is able to hold on and at least make it interesting. I'm not saying they're going to make the playoffs, because I think Miami is still going to make it, even with Bosch out. So that means one spot and a few teams competing. I like Detroit a lot, like we just talked about. And I also like Indiana, especially if Paul George comes back. I know that's still up in the air. He wants to come back, but they might sit him out. So he may or may not be back. If he comes back, I think it's Indiana with a bullet getting that 8 seed. But it's going to be interesting. I think Charlotte's probably going to fade a little bit, especially with Kemba Walker out. I think that Boston's going to fade now with Jaren Sullinger. So it's going to come down to Brooklyn, Detroit, and Indiana. And I think Brooklyn's going to be able to at least be in the conversation. And I liked that Thad Young deal for them at the trade deadline.
Yeah, that's a good trade, I guess. But the thing is, it's Brooklyn. And it's Lionel Hollins. They hate each other in there. He's around all those coach killers. He doesn't like those people. They don't like him. They haven't finished blowing up yet. They're going to implode completely from the inside if they haven't already. Man, but I'm liking where Detroit is sitting, dude. I'm liking where Detroit is sitting. I like Indiana, though, and I like Boston. What about Orlando? You think Orlando's got a shot? They're not too far away.
No, or Orlando doesn't have a shot, I don't think. Again, that's a team that's intriguing in the future. They have a lot of young pieces, obviously. Victor Oladipo and Elfrid Payton and Nikola Vucevic. Those are, you know, some good young pieces to build around. But I think, you know, with Channing Frye and that contract that when they signed him, I just thought, why are you signing him to that? And maybe with the increases in the cap over the next couple of years, it won't look as bad. But I just don't necessarily see Orlando, you know, they're six games back. I mean, they're 18-39. Now, let's just take a second to talk about how god-awful the Eastern Conference is. We're talking about teams right now, Phil, aside from our side conversation about Milwaukee. All of the teams that we're talking about have losing records, okay? Miami is 23-31 at the time of this recording, and we're talking about a team in the Orlando Magic potentially being in the playoff hunt at 18-39. Meanwhile, the Western Conference will have two teams more than likely with winning records not make the playoffs. More than likely Phoenix and New Orleans, now that Oklahoma City has slid back into the eighth seed and Russell Westbrook is looking like the MVP of the league. So I think that this is another example of some realignment being needed. And I know that Adam Silver has said in recent days that, you know, the 1-16 thing, that might be possible. And I would be an advocate for that at this point, because as a fan of a Western Conference team, the fact that two Western Conference teams that might have winning records aren't going to make the playoffs, and there's more than likely going to be two in the East that have losing records making it, that's nutty to me. You're not having the true best teams in the NBA in your playoffs.
You're having the two best teams in the conferences. It is what it is. Anyway, Joe, great stuff today. Thanks for being on the show. We'll catch up with you next week.
Absolutely. Thank you, Phil.
Thank you. That was Joe Mullinax, and you can catch him over at grizzlybearblues.com, and we'll be right back. You're listening to The Phil Nason Show.
The Phil Nason Show will return after these brief messages.
Riveting talk radio.
Everybody get up. People cannot get away from the internet.
Well,
now,
I think, and it probably comes from porn as well. You know what I mean? That's got to be a big, strong thing.
Oh, that's gross. That's disgusting.
And it freaks me out.
My cheeks are sealed.
We love talk radio.
Bend over, baby.
Do you see what I'm saying?
WeirdTalkSuperstation.com.
Better than sex.
I don't know how good sex is.
We're going to do a lot of drinking.
Dog radio. Bend over, baby.
That was great.
FanDuel and the Phil Nason Show have partnered to bring you a very special offer. FanDuel will give you a 100% signing bonus of up to $200 with your first-time initial deposit. To receive this bonus, simply sign up at FanDuel using the promo code PhillyFlash and go win some cash with a flash at FanDuel.com.
Central Portugal's only English-speaking information station, this is Epics Radio. Listen online, www.epicsradio.com.
If you're looking for a great Portland Trail Blazers talk radio show, then look no further than the Blazers Edge podcast with Dave Deckard and Phil Nasons. For weekly hard-hitting commentary about your Trailblazers and fun NBA talk as well, please try the Blazers Edge podcast at blazersedge.com. Maximum Sports Channels is more than just a radio station. Phil's fantasy sports blog, the writer's Garrett, up-to-the-minute news feeds, great sports and entertainment commentary, Maximum Sports TV, including professional powerboat racing, and of course, the hottest music on the planet. Maximum Sports Channels. We're more than just a radio station.
You're listening to AFR, the Armed Forces Radio Network.
Pocket, and you're listening to Phil Nesson's show.
Welcome back to the Phil Nason Show. The NBA trade deadline wreaked havoc with a lot of different people's fantasy basketball rosters. And joining me to try to make some sense out of all of it, from RotoWire NBA, please welcome Alex Reclean to the Phil Nason Show. How you doing, dude? Welcome to the show.
I'm doing great. I had such an exciting weekend. I was so thrilled with all those trades.
Oh, me too. I got to tell you, I busted my tush trying to sort all this foolishness out, you know. Some of them are, it's really strange. Let's start with Reggie Jackson. Now, Reggie Jackson went to about 28% owned on last Wednesday, and that's not the case anymore. And there's a reason why. He had 17 points, 5 rebounds, and 5 assists, and a couple of threes on Sunday. What's his value where's his value at now?
Well, his value just skyrocketed it, and at least for now, he should be owned on every team or in every league. Now, maybe it won't work out. Maybe he will be unproductive with the minutes that he has, but at which case you can drop him in a couple of weeks. But that's the worst case scenario. His value has shot up. A lot of people think Stan Van Gundy. And there's a lot of evidence to back this up. A lot of people think Stan Van Gundy is excellent at helping point guards restore their shot. Reggie Jackson plays with a lot of energy, and he has shown us what he can do when Westbrook was out last year and at the beginning of this year. He can be a very quality fantasy contributor. It was just in that smaller role off the bench that he started to struggle. His value is through the roof. He needs to be owned in every league, at least for now.
Oh, yeah. Every league, at least for now. I didn't put him on my waiver wire article this week because he doesn't have 4 games otherwise. And I would think that this is a no-brainer. Thunder fans didn't like him, but that goes here nor there. Let's stay with the Thunder in the Pistons trade. Enes Kanter. What do you do with Enes Kanter now? Because he's still the same guy. He's probably going to get a lot more minutes with Steven Adams out, right?
He's still the same guy. He's probably going to get more minutes. I don't trust Scott Brooks to do much. Kevin Durant can defend Brooks all he wants, but I'm still going to think that Scott Brooks is one of the worst coaches in the league. And I don't trust Scott Brooks to manage a roster or manage a rotation.
And I agree with you. I wouldn't let him manage a Burger King.
Kanter's value definitely goes up. But he is not a must-add. There are people who are more dynamic, more interesting, have bigger upside. If you want something kind of stable and low upside, but, you know, good chance of a double-double with good percents, then he's worth it. But the upside is small because at the end of the day, as you said, he's still Kanter.
He's still Kanter. They don't get it yet, but they will. Jason Smith is the guy you want to grab. And I'll tell you why, because he's going to get a lot more minutes and he's going to play a more valuable role for the Knicks than Enes Kanter will for the Oklahoma City Thunder. And then when Steven Adams comes back, you're going to have even more of a mess. Now, not with Adams, because he's worthless in fantasy basketball, but it's still he's going to eat up Kanter's minutes.
Yep.
DJ Augustin, he's another one who I owned on 3 teams and I'm dropping him on all 3.
I would hold on to him if I don't have him in any league. I would hold on to him. I am really intrigued by the sort of camaraderie dynamic. If Reggie Jackson was apparently not doing well with the sort of culture and cohesion in Oklahoma City, then Augustin's a great ad because he's played with Kevin Durant already. They're already good friends. They played together back in Texas. And I'm hoping that Scott Brooks will give Augustin appropriate minutes to reflect that. Augustin, I think, is the best wing or guard player on the Thunder other than him out there playing than Morrow or Robertson or Singler or any of those guys.
Or Waiters.
And I think there's still upside. Waiters, of course. I think there's still upside with Augustin. I would hold on to him for a little bit. He's got a short leash, but I would hold on to him for a little bit personally.
Yeah, okay, that's fair enough. I'm still going to drop him because I just don't want any Thunder players on my team.
Unless and there are more exciting options.
Absolutely. But if you have him, maybe you want to hang on to him for a week. He was roommates with Kevin Durant, but Kevin Durant's injured now too, and that is what it is. But Udonis Haslem is a guy. You know, this whole thing with Chris Bosh is just upsetting on multiple levels. I would have thought with the trade with Goran Dragic, that makes them a Eastern Conference finalist almost. You know, Goran's pretty tough, but now with Bosh out, Udonis Haslem, he's going to be the guy.
Unless they pick someone up. I've heard some rumblings that they're going to look for look for the people who've been cut. Look for the free agents available and see if they can pick someone up there. And if they do, that could end up hurting Haslem. But for now, for the short term, Haslem is a very valuable add. Must add for 14-team leagues and bigger, worth adding in 12 teams and 10 teams. I think there are more dynamic players to look at, but worth considering in a 10-team.
Well, that's fair enough. You know, you remember when I recommended Chris Middleton a few weeks ago?
I hope
people picked him up because he's going to go through the roof.
Oh, yeah, looking way better now.
Way better now. I try to tell people he was having a pretty good time then, too. And now he's just, oh, boy, it's going to be fun. What was the worst trade for you, fantasy-wise?
Fantasy-wise? I don't know. I was so hadn't even thought about it. I've been thinking about it so much from a team-by-team perspective. I didn't understand what the Bucks were doing at all from a pure basketball perspective.
Me neither. I was kind of stupid, you know, but Phoenix raked them.
Yeah, I don't know. So I don't know what the Bucks are doing. I don't know. There's so much upside. I want to think about this positively. I think we might be experiencing the rebirth of Danilo Gallinari out in Denver now with Aflalo gone. And I'm excited for that possibility. Danilo's great when he's healthy. He's had such injury problems, but I'm excited about him. I have too much excitement about this trade deadline to be focusing on who's the loser.
Well, I agree. I think the winner, though, there are several winners. Yeah, yes. Milwaukee, ooh. I'll tell you who won is Aaron Aflalo because he's going to get to play. But unfortunately, Nicholas Batum is going to lose a couple minutes unless he can get back on track. And if he can, then it's going to be Wesley Matthews. One of those guys are going to probably lose a couple of minutes. But if you're a Portland fan, as I am, that's a good thing. I mean, you're doing all right. I like the Danilo Gallinari thing. When he was with the Knicks, I was upset when they traded him away for Carmelo Anthony and J.R. Smith.
And his first full year in Denver, the year after that trade happened, he was in, according to ESPN's Player Rater, he was in the top, I want to say top 30 in terms of all-around production before he got hurt. I think he got hurt in maybe January or February. And obviously his production, you know, when he came back, he wasn't fully healthy. But until he got hurt, he was producing top 30 numbers that season. I remember he was saving my fantasy team. I picked him up as sort of just a random last minute guy. And he was excellent that year. So he's got some major upside if he can stay healthy. He's the guy I'm most excited about. And yeah, Batum's a big loser in terms of individual losers.
Oh, right. Yeah. Remember a couple of years ago, he was like a top or first round draft choice because he stuffed the box, boy.
Yeah.
He really did. He stuffed the box score. But this ought to be
five
interesting.
5x5 game.
Oh, yeah. 5x5 in a head to head league. Woo wee. He was a killer. He was like a top 5 guy. He was fantastic, but it is what it is. This is what happens. But then again, LaMarcus Aldridge has rose to the point that he is what he is, and Damian Lillard kind of took away some of that too. But this is going to be a fun rest of the season. There's about 3 weeks left of the regular season, so folks, check your trade deadline and have a lot of fun. Alex, great stuff today. Thanks for being on the show with me. Good luck this week.
Thanks for having me, and you as well.
All right, that was Alex McLean, and you can catch him over at rotowire.com, and we'll be right back. You're listening to The Phil Nason Show. Welcome back to The Phil Nason Show. We're wrapping up an amazing day of NBA sports talk. And joining me to talk a little Atlanta Hawks basketball, please welcome from PeachTreeHoops.com, Chris Willis is in the house. Chris, how you doing? Welcome to the show.
Doing pretty good, Phil. How are you doing?
I'm doing fantastic, man. I'm trying to survive this Midwest winter, and I'm not having a very good time with it, to tell you the truth.
Yeah, it's been cold here, too. It's a little bit of snow and ice. Nothing like what you're dealing with, though, I'm sure.
I'm sick of it, really. I'm sick of it. But one thing I'm not sick of is the Hawks. And this was kind of – were you surprised that they didn't make any moves at the deadline?
Not terribly. You know, they've valued their chemistry throughout the season. They've said it many, many times. They feel that's one of their biggest strengths. So I didn't see anything earth-shattering coming down. Nothing that would have disrupted the roster a great deal. So it's not surprising. I wouldn't be surprised if they didn't add a free agent at some point. They've got a roster spot open. But, you know, the deadline came and went about like we expected it to.
Yeah, I think you're right. I didn't expect any movement there, and we'll be talking about all that stuff on the Peachtree Hoops podcast, which is probably up at the same time this is, but it's all good. You know, one thing, though, is this is a tough week for the Atlanta Hawks. You're looking at Dallas, Orlando, and Miami this week. What are you expecting to see? What are you hoping to see as someone who covers and obviously cheers for the Atlanta Hawks?
Well, first things first, you know, you'd like to see them get back to playing that style of basketball that they were so successful with. They're struggling a little bit right now. Defensively, they don't have the same intensity, it doesn't look like. You know, they struggled in that loss against Toronto to open the coming out of the All-Star break. So, you know, I'd just like to see them get back to playing Hawks basketball, get back to you know, playing with a little bit of an edge, a little bit of a fire. It just seems like, you know, it's that point of the season coming out of the break. Hopefully they can get rejuvenated pretty quickly.
Well, we hope so, because this is a good basketball team, and it'd be horrible to see them tragedy strike and they start losing. But Dallas is a good team. Now, I don't know what Rondo's going to be doing, and I guess it doesn't really matter. I think it matters more about what the Hawks do and getting back to moving the ball, making buckets, and playing defense.
Yeah, and I think you hit on it there. The defensive part is the most important part of that equation. When they're playing it locked in defensively, it fuels their offense. You know, they've struggled with turnovers lately. They need to shore that up a little bit. They're giving up too many easy baskets off of their turnovers. So everything's relative. I mean, they just need to get that edge back, I believe, get that sharpness back, get focused in and playing together again. And, you know, it's a long season. I mean, it's not you're concerned, but at the same time, it's not something that you start losing sleep over. I mean, it's a long season and teams go through ups and downs like this.
Well, they certainly do. And this is the type of team, though, that people were expecting and hoping for them to collapse, and it'd be horrible if it actually happened. I don't think it will, though. You know, this is still a really good basketball team, and people forget that, I think. And I think that we have to keep reminding them that this is still a good basketball team.
Yeah, I mean, we've heard it. I heard it a lot since they stood pad at the deadline. I mean, a lot of people were looking for the Hawks to make a major move, and I mean, it was possible, but it was unlikely all the way. You know, I mean, this team still has got a decent sized lead in the Eastern Conference. You know, obviously you're always looking to get better, but you know, I don't think the Hawks were in a situation where they felt like they had to make a move.
Yeah, why paint them in a corner like they have to make a move? Really, they don't. They've had an explosive first half. Letdowns happen. But against Dallas, you don't want that. And why break up the chemistry of a great team or a potentially great team by making a trade? Because we've seen that happen way too often. So those folks out there who think the Hawks should have done something, they need to go sit down somewhere.
Yeah, I mean, you know, like I said, I think the team was interested, explored a lot of different things that might to improve, but I don't really feel like they thought that they really needed to go that route. And anything significant would have severely altered the rotation as it is now, and it altered that chemistry. And as you saw with Indiana last year, you know, some of the deals they made at the trade deadline probably hurt them, even though they added some pretty good talented players to their lineup. So, you know, it'll be interesting to watch. I think they'll get back. They usually bounce back pretty well. So, you know, hopefully they can do that sometime this week.
And we want to see it on Wednesday night against Dallas. That's where we want to see it. And I think that we will, too. And that's the whole thing. You know, you can't keep these guys. They haven't played poorly since the first 2 weeks of the season. I mean, it has to slow down a little bit, but still, they're playing pretty well. And like I said, they have a pretty interesting week. Great test with Dallas, Orlando. This is where they're going to get it on track at some point, either against Dallas or Orlando, because then they got to face Miami, too.
Yeah, I mean, you know, the schedule. You know, Dallas is sitting there. They're a good Western Conference team. That'll be a test. You got Orlando, and then you're at Miami, who's reeling a little bit after all this bad news with Chris Bosh. So, yeah, it's gonna be an interesting week. I mean, the Hawks got opportunities here to get themselves the ship righted and get some wins back under their belt. So we'll see how it goes.
Well, it should be interesting. Who do you need to see come and play strong this week?
It's hard to single out one player with this Hawks team. When they're playing well, it's the same issue as when they're playing well. But, you know, I think it really starts with Jeff Teague. You know, if you've got to name one person, I mean, it seems like when he's rolling, you know, the rest of the team's rolling too. So I'd like to see him be very assertive over this next week or so, and you know, really take it to as a personal challenge to guys like Rajon Rondo and those matchups, and see if he can't set the table for the Hawks.
And that's what we hope to see happen. Honestly, I want to see Damari Carroll play a little more aggressive, and I want to see Al Horford play a little more aggressive, and I want to see Jeff Teague get to the rim more. That's what I want to see from the Hawks.
Yeah, I agree. And I mean, and that's a good point there. I mean, they need to play inside first, you know, and that's something everybody always talks about, the three-point shooting and focuses on that. But, you know, the Hawks have to attack the paint. And when they attack the paint, that opens up the perimeter, and not vice versa. You know, so, you know, that starts with Teague. That starts with getting Paul Millsap some post touches and, you know, getting that pick and pop game going with Al Horford.
And that's where it needs to be. And that's the whole thing. And I didn't mention Paul Millsap because you don't really have to kick him into gear, because he's just going to do what he's got to do. And that's what's so fun about covering the Hawks is, like you said, it isn't just one guy. It's several. But they all have to be there at the end. Otherwise, it really sucks.
Yeah. Yeah. It's a fun group to watch, you know. To the team concert. I lose you. Okay. Yeah, they're kind of a throwback to the team concept. Something you see every day in the NBA, but it's the sum of the parts, you know, is greater than just the individual guys. So it'll be interesting to see how they go forward this week.
Well, I think you're right. It's going to be fun. It's going to be a great test, great basketball for the Atlanta Hawks. Great stuff today, Chris. Thanks for toughing out the internet with me. And that was Chris Willis, and you can catch him over at peachtreehoops.com, and that's going to wrap it up for today's show. Until next time, y'all take care of yourselves. Be good. And most importantly,
ladies and gentlemen, my mother thanks you, my father thanks you, my sister thanks you, and I thank you.